around. United takes his time. About to check outside the games. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you wanna go to that whole mile on the range. They got a lot of nice girls.
Well, there you go. And then the music stops. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Drive Through HR. This is William Tincup. Brian is speaking today, and Nisha is actually sick, or at least coming down with a cold. So we're flying solo as a host, but we have a wonderful guest and a great topic, and we're very lucky. I had the guest that was scheduled for today canceled this morning, which, you know, when you do 285 shows a year, that happens. It always throws me into a wall, but it happens. But we're lucky enough, put out a post on Facebook, and about 20 people responded to that and me privately, and we are lucky that we get to have Brian Chaney. Brian lives in Texas, thank God, and he saw it and threw out a topic, and it's a topic that's near and dear to my heart, and I thought it would be great for us to talk about. Brian, how are you doing today? Brian, are you on mute? All right. So Brian will get back to us in a second. Hey, let's see here. Hey, Brian. Brian, dial back in, and let's see if that fixes things. So, yesterday we had a wonderful call. If you haven't listened to it yet, it's actually really, really good. Pamela was on the show. She's been on the show, I think, twice or three times. And new job, new bit, and we talked the entire show about onboarding, kind of like your first 100 days, what you should do. And it really actually stuck with me all day and into the night. And it was just kind of a really, I think just kind of a wonderful way to kind of look at technology doesn't solve all your problems. You know, the policies, in fact, she had a quote in there where she was just like, you know, policies and procedures, we've got to be able to understand that stuff and then be able to look past it to get engagement. So anyhow, if you haven't listened to the show, it's just a wonderful, especially if you're curious about onboarding, go back and listen to it. It's in the archives. It's wonderful. Brian, I hear you bumbling around there. I don't know what happened. Blog Talk Radio. We'll just blame it on those people. How are you doing, brother?
I'm fantastic. Can you hear me okay?
I can, and we can. And thanks again for jumping in and being on the show today. Do everyone a favor and introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you.
So I've been in the recruiting field for a little over 9 years, and I've been in the RPO world, the corporate side of the game, and as well as doing some consulting. My focus is really around helping recruiters and sourcers with not only how to, you know, define what a candidate really looks like, but how to really speak to them and reach them in ways that matter to them. So that's the big umbrella. But part of that is you know, teaching people how to leverage social channels, not just the technology, but the philosophy behind it, and as well as rolling out pieces of recruiting technology. And there are a lot of things that I've learned in that process. And one of them is that you really have to understand people's motivation to learn and to change, and that's a huge driver for me. And like you said, I'm in Texas, and I fought turning my heat on until today. So other people in much more blustery parts of the country are going to be mumbling under their breath, but it only happened today, and fighting that change was to solve a problem, and I think that that has a lot of parallels in the HR technology world.
Nice. Do I remember this right? Were we at the same offsite years ago in Austin? Did you and I meet in Austin?
Your memory served you well. Yes, we were.
That was a different era. I was really wheels off back then, so I'm glad we're still friends. do us a favor. Tell us what is keeping you up at night. What's top of mind?
I think really helping people understand how to learn new concepts, whether it's social recruiting, whether it's a new ATS, applicant tracking system, or even a CRM, anything like that that gets people to do things in a different way to affect that change, I think is really, really keeping me up at night. I think there are a lot of parallels between recruitment marketing and the motivators that drive people to change. And I think that, understanding those motivators is one of the keys to really get people to do things differently, which I don't know if you've looked at any of the social recruiting numbers, but it's a much more efficient way to recruit, but we're not really changing how we're leveraging it yet. We're still looking at it through old lenses, and I think getting the concepts behind change is really the tough part of getting people to learn and understand how they can improve.
Do you think there's a difference, or do you see a difference in things that are chosen for you versus things that you choose? So let's say you're the VP of recruiting at a firm, and you choose the technology stack versus you being a hiring manager in that same scenario and someone else choosing technology for you.
Oh, yeah, huge, huge difference. Obviously, that comes from the place that you where you sit on the bus, right? In some cases, it'll be the limousine. It's figuring out how it's actually going to be used. And I think, you and I had chatted back and forth before and equated it, I think, very well to a Christmas gift. We're starting to get closer to the holidays, and I would be very careful about buying someone a gift that they had to use every single day, because they're only going to understand the ins and outs and the needs and the desires that drive the adoption and the usage of that, of whatever that is, especially technology, right?
You had mentioned in pre-show about learning curves. I want to drill into that a little bit, because I typically, when I give this talk, I talk about the adoption life cycle of being, hey, there's early adopters. There's basically people that, consume technology on pace. And then there's laggards. So it's very simple kind of a way to look at adoption. And I talk to people about learning styles, about how we like to learn differently. Some people like to get into an application and really kind of tool around. They don't want a whole lot of lectures or videos or any of that type of stuff. Some people like reading. Like I've met people in my travels that they go through the FAQ and they read before they get into an application. And there are different learning styles that are at play in an organization. But you really had kind of an interesting take on learning curves. Tell us a little bit about that bit.
So I think that everybody's learning curve looks a little bit different, depending upon what they're motivated by. The people at the front of the curve are going to be motivated by driving advancement, having an advantage over other people doing the same thing. So the people who are the early adopters, the people who would try things to see if it'll give them that edge, it'll change, it'll move the needle in a noticeable way. And then the people towards the end of that adoption curve, the laggards, as you said, are really more motivated by security or safety. They want to make sure they know that what they're changing to has been proven and tested, and is a reliable source of information. So there's very different motivators between the front and the back end of that learning curve, And I think everybody, and you know, I know I have to. Sometimes I have to write things down in order to learn them. There's actually you know, four different types of learning. Some people have to hear it. Some people have to write it. Some people have to do it. So there are all kinds of different ways that that we learn. And if you aren't looking at that angle when you're teaching people, then you're only going to hit the people who learn like you do.
What's your take on motivating folks? Do you have kind of a standard bit, or just what's your approach? How do you get people? So if you walk into an organization and you've got 100 recruiters sitting there, and you understand that they learn differently and they're going to have different motivators, et cetera, do you believe you can manipulate them? Not manipulate, that sounds really, really bad, but do you think you can properly motivate them to consume technology?
Yeah, I think motivate is probably a better word, especially if you're talking to them about it. I absolutely do, because they're all going to see it, how it affects their work desk, right? That's nice and all, but how is it going to affect me? And if you can look at how those and if you know your audience, then you can look at how those people you know, need to interpret that information, and you can frame it in that particular way, if that makes sense. So let's walk down a use case scenario. Let's say it's an applicant tracking system, and you know that the recruiters are motivated by efficiency, cutting steps out of their process, keeping their time sacred. Well, then I would take that approach and say, here are the specific steps that you've been going through. Let's throw way back and say that they were working out of our good buddy Excel, and that's how they were keeping track of their candidates. Well, you know, being able to share records across teams, being able to keep track of all the different points of contact with a specific candidate, all that saves time and effort, and I would focus on that to that specific group of recruiters.
All right, let me throw out a bit. I tell people that if you really want to get consumption, if you really want to get usage, add usage of said tool to their performance review, i.e. their job description. So you go all the way back in and you say, listen, this is so important to us. Your use of Taleo, as a for example, is so critical to our business and so important to our business that we're actually adding it to your job description. We're going to train the heck out of you. We're going to make sure you're competent and confident. But in 6 months when we have your performance review, your performance review is going to be tied in some ways. One of the pieces is going to be tied to your command of this application. And again, you know, that's just a thought, and I tell people that. What's your take when I say that? Do you vomit? Do you like it? What's your take on it?
I think that's going to work well for the people who are motivated by whatever performance review is dominoing, meaning whatever, if the performance review is driving compensation or bonus, then absolutely, you're going to hit the people who are motivated by remuneration. But if they're driven more by internal recognition, then I would probably not only say, hey, you know, we need this to be adopted, we need this to be part of your performance review, but also to tack on a peer recognition for usage of the tool. And I actually went through, remember back in the day when we went through the offsite, when I was with that company, you know, they actually had an internal wiki or knowledge sharing platform, and the leader of the organization did a fantastic job of motivating people to leverage that platform and share the knowledge by going into the back end of the analytics and seeing who the prevalent users were and praising them on almost a weekly basis. So in addition to, you know, a performance review, which I think is not a bad idea, but I think it would really be driven by your specific group of people and what their motivators are. I would also look at the recognition piece, because you know that's a huge motivator as well within HR specifically.
What do you think about the concept of a buddy program or mentor programs to garner adoption?
I think that creating more of a subject matter expert within small groups. I think the buddy system works, but I think sometimes that the buddy system might not scale. So I think that if you can get more of a deputized subject matter expert within different groups and have them understand how everything works and how to teach it, and get them indoctrinated so that they're an internal resource among those use teams, then I think that's really helpful. And I've had to do that in a few different countries, actually. So I definitely think that's a fantastic approach that can get people leaning on each other and learning from each other.
What are the lines of demarcation for vendors and practitioners, meaning who's responsible for adoption? It kind of seems like, from the outsider looking in, it kind of seems like it's doubles tennis, and you just kind of keep hitting it down the middle, and the vendor thinks that HR or recruiters have it, and HR or you know recruiters think that when they buy great software that adoption just kind of mystically happens. So in your travels, you know, where do you think that vendors need to do more of this and practitioners need to do more of that?
I actually think it's instead of doubles, it's more triples. It's you know, I try to play that one right on the tennis court. But it's the vendor. It's the people who understand the relationship. That's number one. I think the people who sit in the seat, in the user seat, whether that's a licensed seat or what have you, I think they're responsible for learning and adoption. And I think the party that signs the check or the purchase order is responsible for imparting, you know, how the adoption affects the bottom line.
That's nice. Hey, I had a quick note on the learning curves. How do we know how people like to learn? Like, what's the organizational responsibility before we do a rollout or even during implementation or whatever it looks like? Like, how do we know Jenny likes to learn this way and James likes to learn that way?
Well, a lot of it can be pretty organic. I know that organic doesn't necessarily scale, but you can – you can learn a lot around their learning approaches by watching specific note taking. You know, whether it's pictures. I think I'm going to say the P word and say you can watch how people create PowerPoint presentations as well. How they communicate visually. Do they use a lot of words? Are they using more visuals and then using concepts to back up those visuals, and I think you know there's some of that can scale in you know personality tests and things like that you know during onboarding or during pre-assessment, but I think once they're on board, there are some pretty basic things you can do to learn or uncover their learning methodology, and I think you know whether that's through surveys, whether that's through a quick email. It's all going to nail down which of the four learning types, you know, is most natural for them. And it could even be as simple as straight up asking them which one of these four do you prefer.
What do you think change management looks like in most organizations when they change technology, and not the fictional stuff that we read about, but what do you think change management really looks like behind the veil?
What do I think it really looks like?
Mm-hmm.
I think it looks like a lot of clawing and crying. But I think in a real world scenario, you've got kind of the positive and the negative approach, and you know on the negative side you have it by you know start with I feel threatened. And then I must change, and then, you know, kind of sinks into, I'll react to this if I have to, and then, okay, I have to do it this new way. And that's kind of a negative path. From a change management perspective, it goes down a much more positive path from I'm being communicated something to understanding it. I really know what it is, and then I see how this affects me, and I see where the opportunities are in this change. And if you can walk down that path, I think it's a lot more positive way to get people to understand why something is happening versus, versus someone being told that they have to adopt it because so-and-so has a relationship with someone on the board of directors at this company. And I think that's a lot of times what happens. We don't take the personal approach. We take the organizational or the bureaucratic approach, which is because I said so, right, which is the old parental fallback.
You mentioned communications. I want to get a sense of what you think communication should look like in a perfect environment. You know, say you're switching out ATSs. We're going from, iSIMS to Newton software. So we're switching out ATSs. We've made the decision, et cetera. What should communications look like?
Communications should, depending upon the group, whether or not they're involved in a decision or whether or not they just need to be informed of the decision, right? So if it's involved in a decision, then it needs to happen really early on and figure out, hey, why are we walking down this path? And what problems are we trying to solve for? If it's just communicating what's going on, then you can say, hey, we're looking at this new system because we're trying to solve for X, Y, and Z. And here are the things that this solves, and this is the time frame that we're looking at, making the change as soon as we make that decision. And so it's the old blogging approach, right? Tell the people what you're going to tell them, tell them specifically what's going on, and then reiterate, tell them what you told them. And I think that using that approach from a communication standpoint is the best way to get people to accept it, because as you know, people have to hear things multiple times before they even listen to it, before they understand it, and before they can accept it.
You mentioned social recruiting, and one of the things I wanted to ask you about that is social recruiting, like a lot of things social, especially on the marketing side, the fail around social probably goes back to its roots is that people thought of it as free. So when social first started, and social marketing, as I'm thinking about it, you know, people would always like, you know, viral, guerrilla, and let's just, it's free, it's just free, just tweet about it, it's free. And so I don't know if social marketing has ever recovered from that. Do you know, what's your take on social? If someone were to say social recruiting is less expensive or more expensive, what would you be inclined to tell them?
Well, that's less expensive or more expensive than what? I think that's my first counter. What are we comparing?
The traditional, yeah. Like, say we're PepsiCo. You and I are now Chris Hoyt, the split personalities of Chris Hoyt. We're at PepsiCo. We're hiring all kinds of people, but let's just say a lot of hourly folks, just for giggles. And we've tried all kinds of different marketing approaches. We've tried a lot of different things and a lot of traditional media, if you will, advertising and things like that. And we've tried social. Would you think that social were, and I'm not even dealing with effective, I'm just dealing with just pure cost, what do you think his metrics look like?
Well, and I think from that angle, it's hard to look at cost without looking at effectiveness.
Mm.
Because you're, you know, the flat balance sheet of it is going to be less because there's more of a creative cost. There's more of a time, effort, and energy cost behind doing social right. And I think if you really look at the true cost, then you have to look at it compared to the effectiveness. Because if you look at typical job advertising, and you have, and I'll throw out a number here. It's based on aggregate results from a buddy of mine who did a research study, and he unearthed the fact that there were 1,000 applies to every hire through traditional job advertising channels. And when he looked at social channels, it went down to, believe it or not, 34 applies per hire. So for me, you know, if you took even half of the traditional advertising costs and sunk them into content marketing for recruitment, then you would be able to dial all that back to hire and at a much more effective rate. So I think to your original question, I think social marketing for recruiting can recover, and it will recover, because there will always be someone on the end of that quarter or that year, that calendar year, asking, okay, how did we do? What were our results? What were our hires, and how are we tracking that? So I think it can recover, and it will, but we're still in the wake of all of the warm and fuzzy buzz around social recruiting.
You mentioned if done well, and I know you probably have a way to look at that, or a lens in which you look at social recruiting, if done well. What are some of the tenets of that? What are some of the pillars of when you look at somebody's brand and you kind of evaluate it or you audit it, and you either, you know, you're giving them a grade. I mean, I know how you are. You're giving them a grade in your mind. You're like, okay. What is that if done well for you?
Well, I think it's responsiveness. I think it's conversation and not just conversion. And I think it's looking at the content that's shared through social channels and being able to tie it back to specific people that they're trying to recruit. If you can't do that, then it's really tough to not only speak to your audience, but also track the return on that effort, on that content. If you know who you're recruiting with a specific piece of content or a specific activity, it's a lot easier to track that back to results.
Who in your mind, if you name three brands, who in your mind is just really kind of on top of their game?
I think Amtrak is really trying some new things out and kind of pushing what's expected in the social recruiting world, and I actually think that the SuccessFactors is doing a fantastic job of kind of slicing what their audience looks like and how they can speak to them and what they really need to hear. And I think there are a lot more examples, but I think those are two of the ones that are really trying different things, looking for that advantage in the marketplace, back to the early adopter bell curve we were talking about.
Awesome. Hey, listen, we've got about 60 seconds. I know you do a lot of webinars, and I'm sure you probably have one coming up. What's your next webinar, and then tell us your Twitter ID, and then we'll get on with our business.
Fantastic. So my Twitter handle is Brian Chaney, BryanChaney, all together. And I actually am leading a webinar tomorrow that's around HR tech adoption. The hashtag is just HR tech adoption altogether. And I'm also going to be tweeting out here in just a moment a link to the webinar. It's a free webinar that talks about these learning curves and the process that you can go through to figure out how to get people motivated.
Oh, that's genius. Brian, thank you for stepping in today. I absolutely appreciate it. Our audience appreciate it. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Drive Through HR today, letting us invade your ear hole. Everyone have a wonderful afternoon, and thanks again. Bye-bye. Thanks, Brian.
Take care.
Bye, brother.